Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 290, recorded on March 13th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and this show is sponsored by HelloFresh, delivering delicious, perfectly portioned meals right to your door for $35 off your first box. Visit HelloFresh.com and enter the code TIOSS when you subscribe. Jeff Gamet is here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm good.
Sweet.
Yeah. And Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I think my neighbor's vacuuming now, so that's cool. At least there's a reason for the noise.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not just inexplicable, like TV moving.
The carpet will be clean.
That's good. That's good.
What's happening?
You know, besides the vacuuming?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like in the world of iOS.
Not much. I think we're done.
Okay, cool.
Well, that was a great show.
Yeah. No, actually, no, wait. There was a thing. Apple sent out invites for a thing on March 21st at their town hall, right? It's going to be at the Apple campus. Mm-hmm. It's called Let Us Loop You In, and it has some fancy colors on it.
Yeah, kind of springy, pastel-ish colors.
I think people have interpreted them as the gold, rose gold, and silver and black colors of the iPhone.
Really?
I love how people try so hard to read a secret message.
Well, as soon as it's pointed out, it's very obvious that that's what those colors are.
Sure, but I just think it's funny that people are so compelled to try and read secret messages into every media announcement. And yes, I know Apple does clever things. It's just...
It's fun that Apple has gotten people to do that.
Yes.
Can I throw out my harebrained theory whole loop us in or loop me in or whatever it is? I think they're going to have tour buses set up outside, and I think they're going to take media over and let them see the new campus.
I think that would be a lot of fun. I hope they do that.
I like that. They're going to say, please stop flying drones over our thing now.
Like, they'll do the event, and then afterwards, hey, if you want to go over and check out the new digs, we'll give you a little tour.
Maybe. I feel like that might be too early.
They've already been doing it to The Verge and some of those places have already had little private tours with showing off photos.
So. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Why don't you people tell me anything?
Talk about the giant glass panels and how Apple had to build whole special machines to put them into place.
Yeah, was it ABC that got that whole behind the scenes thing where they got to take photos of Johnny Ives standing in front of the machine?
Yeah, and then there, somebody else did a story and had photos and stuff. They were lifting the roof piece into on top of the theater. You know, the glass area above the theater.
Right.
So the new theater is all underground. It's 3,000 seats or something like that. It's huge. Or 1,000, maybe it's 1,000. I don't remember.
Whatever it is, it's big.
And they have the largest single piece of the roof's made out of
carbon fiber.
Carbon fiber, yes. It's the largest piece of carbon fiber roof material ever produced or something. It looks like a giant spaceship.
It's pretty cool.
And they're lowering it in. It's just this big round glass.
Yeah, seen the photos of that where they're putting it in as a single piece.
Yeah, they're just
drop it on there.
Done.
Yep.
You know, and they had to get that giant thing big enough to cover an entire theater into the construction area. That must have been an ordeal.
Well, and then there's Mount Tim over there too, so they might want to show the press Mount Tim.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
His giant pile of dirt that he likes to show off. Seriously, they take a 4x4 Jeep up to the top of it and look at what we are building.
Well, I mean, that does sound like a lot of fun, taking a 4x4 up there and just, you know, going up and checking it out.
Oh, yeah. I totally
off-road.
Oh, yeah.
Big old pile of dirt. Yeah. So at the event, besides possible tours, I guess.
I'm totally making that up.
I know.
No, let's go with it.
That was my harebrained thing when I read the title. I'm like, oh, maybe they're
unnamed sources say that Apple is going to do bus tours of the spaceship facility for media at the March 21st event.
Cool.
There we go.
Awesome. In addition,
that sounds awesome.
9.7 inch iPad. We'll probably see that. The iPad Air 3, but it seems like they may be calling it the iPad Pro. So it would have many iPad Pro features, like a four speaker design, smart connector for keyboards, possibly
Apple
an LED
Pencil
flash.
Support.
Yeah, Apple Pencil support. We'll also likely be seeing the 4-inch iPhone special edition or SE. It's got to be special edition. Like, it's special for the people who like small phones.
Small edition.
Small edition. Thank you. That's more like it. They're not going to call it that, though. But as far as that, it seems like it's going to have an E9 chip with fancy guts, but mainly look like the 5S. And according to case renderings by Spigen, it seems as though that is... it's pretty much going to look like the iPhone 5S. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's going to make people that want a smaller screen iPhone happy.
Yes. I don't think I'm doing that, though.
I mean, I like the fact that they're bringing the specs up in line with the other one. So even if they don't drastically change the look, the fact that it's going to have the A9 and be like a modern iPhone and not like last year's model at the lower price point, I think they're going to sell a lot. As a matter of fact, I think some of the estimates are it may add as many as 10 million units this year. So
that would be insane.
And it'll kind of help get through the lull. I mean, that in the realm of iPhones, that's not a ton. But again, with the slowing sales, now you have you're avoiding that mid-year slump as people wait for the 7. So now you've got, and I think Apple will stick to the staggered release schedule too, because it sort of evens out the flow of the numbers as Apple's having to do their quarterly reports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone sent an email to Tim Cook about battery life and multitasking and got a response from Craig Federighi. So they asked, do you quit your iOS multitasking apps frequently, and is this necessary for battery life? Craig responds, no and no.
I think that...
very plainly.
I don't know that I'd believe him necessarily.
Where I do believe him, and I think where restarting, and I'm doing the air quotes, restarting apps matters, is if there's something wonky going on with an app, because... When you do the I'm quitting the app thing with the swipe up and then reopen the app, it's resetting stuff for the app, like resetting memory, things like that. So it's useful for that, but I don't think it really does matter much at all for anything else. Quitting apps does make it easier to swipe through the ones that are open.
I just thought it was... interesting that the question was regarding battery life, because I just don't think about my battery life. I don't have any problems with it, but that may be because I don't have Facebook on my phone.
My battery life improved noticeably once I deleted Facebook from my iPhone.
Yeah, that seems to be the issue for people. I don't have Facebook on my phone. I occasionally go to it in Safari.
Yeah, I'll do that.
But
I just can't imagine, like, if you have a lot of apps that are enabling, like, background refreshes and updates, it would have to have an impact on your battery life, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, remember, the way that the background app refresh works is it only does it for certain situations, like
right.
when
no,
you click
that.
Your when you click it on to check the time, it'll say, oh, hey, I've been woken up for something. Let me go and do those other things that I need to do. This is a good opportunity because we're already on, or when a notification comes in, those sorts of things. So it's done very discreetly, and it's not like they're running in the background constantly.
It's only
like a listener. Well, I'm just telling for people who are curious.
But to say there's zero battery life impact seems a little bit off.
I don't believe he said that. But
what was the quote then?
Just no and no.
No, I get that, but he was
is it
no
necessary
question,
for battery life? Is it necessary for battery life?
I mean, honestly,
it comes down to this email did a really terrible job at asking a question that would get any good information.
Right.
It's a really, really specific question.
I mean, from Apple's perspective, I mean, he's going to want to say no, because they've done a lot, like you were saying, to optimize or minimize the amount of battery life that any background processes take.
Yeah.
So from Apple's perspective, you don't need to do it. I mean, that's answering the question, is from their perspective, you don't need to do it. Now, let's talk about real world and what we all do and what perceptions are. And to me, anytime my phone is like acting funky or I'm having weird battery life stuff, that's usually one of the first steps I'll take. And
really?
Very often,
you quit
it
apps?
Seems, whether it's perceived or not, yeah, it seems to me, and it could just be perception, I could be fooling myself, but a lot of times it seems that things get better.
Hmm. So if I know that I have an app that's basically like I open it and I'm in the app or it crashes and that specific app is doing something weird,
right?
I will quit that app. If I'm having general slowness on the phone,
yeah,
I will restart the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't
close all your apps.
Never,
I'll do that.
ever do I do that. I do it maybe once every few months just because it seems like a fun thing to do when I'm bored.
I don't even do that. I'm looking
I'm
right
anal about
to
them
see
being
what
open.
Apps
I just don't like
running.
Them being open, to be honest. Just like it seems messy to me.
Yeah, see, you're one of those
people. I have
apps
running that I forgot I have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, be clear about this, Jeff. You know, they're not running.
Well, I know. I'm just, yeah. The apps that are showing up for me in the, what do we call that view? The app
switcher view, I think.
The app switcher?
I think it's the app switcher, yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing apps in my app switcher that I forgot I even have.
And I think maybe part of it is that people call it the multitasking view. There is no multitasking. It's
right.
Really not multitasking at all. What happens is to any app, if you look at the developer documentation, mm-hmm, when you hit the home button or you hit the sleep wake button or just move to another app in general, that other app is forced to stop executing by the operating system. It's not a choice by the developer, but they do have an opportunity to do some cleanup work before that happens, basically. You know, for example, with 1Password, if you notice that in your switcher, you don't see the passwords or whatever that you had open before you left that app, it actually shows you a secure view. And some apps do that, which is nice because you don't want that stuff just hanging out in the switcher view. And so that's one of the things that apps can do, is they can say, hey, you know, I want to change what my screenshot is going to be, and among several other things. They can also say, hey, I need to continue playing music in the background. So when an app is playing music in the background, you are aware of that typically. Things like that. There are only a few things that can be done by the app developer. Otherwise, it's forcibly closed. And they're also encouraged to do any sort of memory cleanup to get rid of large caches, because, again, the OS will look for apps that are using large amounts of memory when it's needed, and it will just purge that from the memory and just completely close the app entirely. So the app does a lot, or the OS does a lot of background stuff to not only preserve battery life, but to make things speedy for the app that you're using.
What about it just makes me feel better?
That's a totally acceptable reason.
Yeah. So people who, it's probably weird that I watch people use their phone. But there are a lot of people who not only don't use the Touch ID sensor, they're those people who compulsively unlock their phone like 5 different times in a sitting. Like they're just looking at it for no reason. They just open it and then close it. They never use the Touch ID. They have Touch ID, but they type in their little passcode and then they go in there. And when right before they're finished, they double click and swipe up everything and then turn off their phone and then go through the whole process again. It drives me nuts. None of that stuff is is necessary.
Yeah, I can see why that would annoy you.
But I mean, I guess there are some situations where the Touch ID just isn't reliable for some people.
Well, from what I have seen, and yes, I know there are some people where their fingerprints are just like really not conducive to Touch ID. But typically what I've seen when people are having trouble with Touch ID, it has been an issue where they didn't do as good a job as they could have with
the training,
with the training.
Yeah.
And what I found for me made a huge difference is when I'm touching the sensor to train, I'm like putting my finger all different kinds of crazy angles.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm getting a massive amount of my finger into that data set. And when I started doing that, my Touch ID accuracy and reliability went way up.
Yeah. That's one thing that I definitely do. So when it does the initial, so it's like you do a couple initial scans of, I think they encourage you to just kind of put it on there in a typical way. And you should hold your phone. You should hold your phone in the way that you would typically hold your phone.
Yes.
When you're training it. And then, so it moves on to the second portion. And at that point, I will do like the absolute tippy top of my finger and then the absolute bottom region and then the absolute left edge and then the absolute right edge and then kind of keep going around like that until it's happy. But in a way that you're sort of forcing it to ask you for more scans, right? So it's,
yes,
it's different enough that it's like, hang on, I think I need a little bit more information. You just kind of keep going around and around until it's satisfied. And then it does a really good job. And to the point where, I'm sure I've talked about this before, it only lets you do 5. Let me see.
Fingers,
1, 2,
correct.
3. So it's 5.
Yeah, 5.
You can put 2 in 1.
You can put 2 in 1. So I do my middle finger, both middle fingers, as one of the slots. It's like my least used, but it's nice if I have, you know, something on my fingers and I want to use my middle finger. And so that you basically do the same thing, but, you know, trading back and forth.
Use my middle finger when Siri's not behaving and then I just need to unlock my phone to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. She knows.
Passive aggressive.
So I guess Jeff and I both don't really, well, Jeff definitely doesn't ever quit. Clear out the app switcher.
I just discovered apps installed that I totally forgot were there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something where it even bothers me because I have too many in there. It's like if I'm going beyond 3 apps in that switcher, I typically just search for it on the home screen.
Yep. I'll forget about it for a long time.
Or I'll tell Siri to launch an app.
Often if I see it's really loaded, I just clean it up just because it bothers me. Yeah. Then it makes me feel
Fair
better.
Enough. And if you go into settings, hit the battery setting.
Yeah, you can see.
You can see what's using it. And so for me, the last 24 hours, the music has used 40% of my battery.
That's usually what uses most battery.
Background activity. And you can hit the little clock and it'll say, you know, 3.5 hours background, you know, whatever. And it's really like 40% from music and 40% from podcasts, 7% from Safari, and then the rest is just like rounding.
Dude! Mine said the remote app used 39% battery in the last 24 hours, and I was just using the remote app last night with the Apple TV for just a few minutes.
That's odd.
26 minutes on screen. That's weird. I wonder if the phone wasn't. Does the remote app stay open?
It does.
Oh, that's why.
Huh.
Because I probably did something and then just set it down and didn't go back to the Springboard.
That's something you can actually turn on and off in the remote settings. There's a stay connected. So staying connected speeds up wake time, but may decrease battery life.
Oh, I need to change that setting. I didn't know that existed.
I just leave it. It's not something that ever really affects me.
Yeah. It's just a lot of battery for the remote app.
Yeah, that's probably one of the things that they're going to be working on with the next version. Okay, so moving on. There were some more betas. We saw both the... We saw a fifth beta of iOS 9.3, the Apple Watch, so watchOS, Apple TV. One of the... Really, the only change that occurred in any of those betas was in iOS 9.3. They tweaked Night Shift a little bit more so that now when you hit the little Night Shift button, it doesn't ask you a question of, you know, do you want to turn it on for now or later? And, you know, these dumb questions that are just like either turn it on or off. So now it's just you press it and it turns it off, or you press it and it turns it on. No other question, which I think is nice because it works just fine that way. And I never used the other option, whatever the other option was. I couldn't really tell the difference between them. There's a sixth beta. Of 9.3 and all those others, and there are no differences as far as we can see with that sixth version that came out this week. So right. That's kind of looking like we're going to see 9.3 and all those other versions drop probably
21st.
The 21st.
That's my guess.
Yeah, or that week.
That week.
It might come out early. Sometimes they release a couple days before the actual event.
Yeah.
Well, the 21st is a Monday.
Oh, so maybe, yeah. Well, oh, the 21st is a Monday, huh?
Yeah.
That's unusual for Apple to do an event on a Monday.
It is.
Yeah, it's a Monday.
But they're doing it.
Huh.
There was an interesting, talking about security, interesting article on The Verge from Walt Mossberg talking about the iCloud loophole. I was expecting him to go into more detail on the whole how the iCloud backups are encrypted. He didn't really go into that as far as I could see. Did you guys read this article?
Wait, which article?
It's called The iCloud Loophole.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I scanned through bits of it.
I talked about this on my show, and I think, didn't Dave do a piece on TMO related to this like a week or two ago?
So it's talking about how iCloud... So while the
why the FBI could get data from Apple, right?
Yeah, and that's through the iCloud backups, of course, as we've been talking about. The data on the phone is much more secure, but for reasons of convenience, basically, iCloud backups are not as secure, and Apple has to retain keys for that, just because you need to be able to restore to new devices, devices which have been wiped, et cetera.
Mm. Yeah.
Password resets.
It's a customer service. It's a difference between the reason they view it differently than the privacy on the phone is in order to offer up the services that they want with iCloud and to provide customer service, they have to keep the keys.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so they view the security situation differently on a personal device versus the stuff that's on their servers.
Right.
The piece that Dave did, in addition to talking about what Apple has access to, he listed what third-party services like Gmail and Dropbox and CrashPlan have.
Yeah, they almost all operate like this, where they store the keys on their servers and have access to be able to decrypt stuff in the cloud. And they also almost all, just like Apple, comply with valid search warrants and things like that for that data on their servers. And they all have different policies. So it's good to know, what the policies of your cloud provider are and what options they offer. The couple of exceptions that people need to know about is CrashPlan and Backblaze, I think, also offer options where you can generate your own keys and encrypt the data before you put it up onto their servers.
Right.
The only thing that they do is they severely warn you, look, if you forget your keys or you lose your keys or you forget your password, we will not be able to help you get your data back. So,
yeah,
you know, if that matters to you, use our keys, because then we can, you know, get you your data back even if you forget your, you know, like your password. And that's the same thing with iCloud. That's another reason why Apple does it, is because people will forget their iCloud password and then they can't get their backups back. And then that's like all their data. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing that I guess the takeaway is, if you're worried about that data on Apple servers being there, mm-hmm. and accessible to them, your alternative is, of course, to back up to your computer.
Yeah,
which
you can
is
do
still
local
there.
Backup, you and can do, you can encrypt that if you really
mm-hmm.
want.
Mm-hmm. And you can then encrypt your Mac with File Vault as well. So
I use that.
File Vault?
I use File Vault as well.
Yeah, nope. It's something that just doesn't even, you don't even notice it. Yeah.
And you're more secure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like File Vault 1 where it was slow, it was buggy, and you'd probably lose all your data.
Yeah. The other thing to... Yeah. Important to know about iCloud, if people are wondering, is, I mean, if Apple didn't have the keys, they also wouldn't be able to give you the web interface that they give you, right? So they wouldn't
That's
be able
really
to read your contacts or your calendars and display that to you in the web interface, right? Because that would all be encrypted and they wouldn't know how to decrypt it so that they could display it for you. Same thing with documents you have stored in iCloud stuff. So you'd lose that ability to be able to view it on the web. And a lot of people like that feature.
Yeah, I could see where that would be a showstopper for some people.
Yeah. So how do you... I'm looking at restoring files. That's interesting. Oh, iCloud Drive. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this web interface that I had never looked at before.
The web interface for iCloud is really pretty robust. I mean, you can do a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah, you can. And it's been really cool watching over like the past 2 years, really, to see all of these big changes happen, just making the web version of all this stuff they're doing so much better. Like, to the point for some people, you could get by with just the website.
Yeah. If you were remote somewhere and had forgotten your computer and wanted to open a document, especially if it was like an iWork document, I think you can go in there and you can find an iWork document you have stored on iCloud and open it right into the web interface.
Yep, totally can.
Cool. Okay. Let's see here. Oh, you know what? Before we move on, we should talk about the Apple FBI stuff, because there's a lot more. And it's silly. But before that, let's talk about something awesome, which is our sponsor, HelloFresh, at HelloFresh.com. They have a coupon code for you to use, TIOSS. HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new, delicious recipes that include step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks, short on time. They source the freshest ingredients measured to exact quantities needed, so there's no food waste. They employ a full-time registered dietitian on staff who reviews each recipe to ensure it's nutritionally balanced, which is awesome. All of this is delivered right to your doorstop in a special insulated box for free, and all of the ingredients are separated by recipe in fancy little boxes in order to make life simple. They offer both classic boxes and veggie boxes, which you can choose every week. You can actually mix and match those, which is nice. So if you're vegetarian, you can go for those. There are options for 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week, and they can be designed for either 2 or 4 people. So I got my first box a week or two ago, and I loved it. I've actually tried the other guys before, and this was pretty cool, especially with the separated ingredients. It was much more convenient that way. And I also really liked, they give you a booklet basically with all the recipes, and they tell you about, you know, special ingredients that are in there, how much time it'll take, the exact quantities of the food. So you can keep this little booklet around and actually remake the recipes afterward when you just go to the store and get that. But I got honey glazed pork, which was really good. I really hadn't done much with pork, you know, being vegan for 10 years and, you know, switching, I guess this year, last year, something like that. So I learned more about cooking that mozzarella crusted chicken, which is good. And I'd never cooked any Indian food myself. I like Indian. I was afraid of cooking it myself. So I liked the fact that I could get Jamie Oliver's aloo gobi from them and cook my first Indian dish, which was not that hard. And it was delicious too. So now I know I know how to cook that now, and I've got the recipe, of course, for it and all the ingredients and all that for the next time I want to do it. Like I said, awesome packaging, organized, neat, includes everything you need to cook the food, pretty much everything other than like oil and plates and, you know, frying pans and stuff. I loved how much the recipes taught me about cooking, which I think is probably one of the biggest draws with these kinds of services, beyond the whole like not having to go to the store and find all of the ingredients. That is just always the big concern with stuff that you haven't done before. You know, you have to make sure you know where to find the stuff.
The big challenge in my house every week is coming up with what we want to eat for the week.
Yeah.
So a big advantage, I think, too, is you go on the site, they have a bunch of different recipes to choose from, and you just sort of pick. It's almost like ordering at a restaurant, except you're going to get great food that you're going to make yourself and get the family around the table. So, you know, it's nice to not have to think about, oh, what recipe are we going to make this week? You just go pick. You go, oh, that one sounds good. That one sounds good. That one sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And you're done.
And then you're adding stuff to your repertoire for next time, which is really cool. Yeah. And I also enjoyed that. Unlike the other service that I used, this seemed to have enough stuff in it to, you know, really be satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
The other service I used didn't really have enough. It seemed like it was a little bit
appropriate portions.
Appropriate portions, yeah, definitely.
Nice.
And of course, like I said, you don't have to worry about finding the ingredients or making sure you have a recipe that works. It just shows up at your door, which is really cool. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the code TIOSS when you subscribe. It's an awesome deal. Check them out. HelloFresh.com. Use code TIOS. And with that, Apple versus FBI. Okay, we'll get through this quickly. We won't make it too painful.
We're going to be talking about this for like 3 years.
I know.
Yeah, we are.
So eBay, Twitter, Airbnb, Reddit, a bunch of other companies, Dropbox, Cisco, Evernote, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Mozilla, Nest, Pinterest, Slack, Snapchat, WhatsApp, Yahoo have all submitted, how do you say this? Amicus briefs. So it's basically...
The full name is Amicus Curiae.
Thank you.
But yeah, Amicus brief.
Which is a... basically a letter to the court saying, hey, you know,
we're
not involved
Sounds
directly
like something
in
from
this.
The Victoria's Secrets catalog.
Thank you, Adam.
All of a sudden, Amicus Curiae sounds a lot more exciting to me.
Ooh, it does, yeah. Dang it. But it's so, hey, you know, we have an interest in this case because we, you know, this would affect us as well. We know we're not involved in it, but we wanted to throw in our 2 cents on the issue. That's what they basically did, which is good. And they're all in support of Apple on this situation. I like the statement from the San Bernardino DA, who says that he believes the shooter's phone could harbor a dormant cyber pathogen.
Oh.
He did come out later and say that he totally made that up.
Oh,
that he was just like throwing out like, hey, this could be possible.
Wow. Yeah, because it's funny that you say that, because according to John Zdarsky, it sounds like he's making up these terms as he goes.
Yeah,
he admitted it later when
he was called out on it or questioned about it. But, you know, he was just saying, I was trying to make the point, is that we don't know what is on this phone.
Fair enough. It could be anything,
and we need to be able to view it.
Make. You say, yeah, we don't know what's on this phone.
There could be anything.
We want the opportunity.
There could be the codes to the nuclear bombs on this code, on this phone.
Yeah. Everybody's gotten a little bit crazy over this whole thing, including the president.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
holy crap.
The president weighed in on this. He says that you can't take an absolutist view. He's like, we really need a key that only a couple people have. Which is really the worst. Again, I don't know why we're still having that discussion.
Well, the whole thing about the warrant proof stuff, that we've had warrant proof stuff for a really long time, long before the iPhone came along.
Give me an example.
Okay. Diplomatic pouches. That's warrant proof.
Okay.
Even if a diplomatic pouch is brought into the United States without a diplomat, it is still warrant proof.
Mm. Anything else?
How about journalists, documents, and sources?
Okay. Give me more.
How about attorney-client privilege?
Okay.
Now, there are situations where there may be information that wouldn't be included in a warrant proof zone for that, but by and large. Also, you would have doctor patient privilege.
What is it? Spouses being compelled to testify against you.
Mm-hmm.
Lots.
So there you go. That's a whole handful of things right off the top of our head that are warrant proof.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing about the so Obama was at South by Southwest, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
and was asked about some of this stuff, and the one that got me was sort of the veiled threat that, hey, if you don't let this happen, it's going to cause legislation that will basically force companies to force backdoors.
Yeah, that concerned me. Also, yeah. the notion, what was the phrase he used? Fetishizing encryption?
Fetishizing our phones.
Yes. These are things that are actually very disappointing for me to hear from President Obama, especially because he's a constitutional lawyer.
Ooh, right.
So he knows. And yet he's still saying these things. It's very disturbing.
Well, you know, it makes sense. The FBI is his organization. That is directly under his purview. So it makes sense that he would be backing them up on this.
It also makes sense that he would be providing accurate information about how the how this relates to the Constitution, considering his background.
Considering his background, yeah. But I think that at this point, he's got to be head of the FBI first.
No.
It seems like that's
the way the people of the United States come above the FBI. The Constitution of the United States comes above the FBI.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think in his, it's clear that he's playing that the other way around.
And that's very disappointing.
It is. It is disappointing. And the response to his statements have not been positive.
It's amazing to see how polarized things are getting. And I think that's what everybody, like the powder keg is like building, like, you know, on both sides. It's like the tech companies are rallying together on one side, and then you've got the government agencies sort of rallying together on the other side. And when this thing blows up, it is not going to be pretty.
Mm-mm. No, it is not.
Yeah, we've got statements from Craig Federighi. We've got statements from Tony Fidel.
You've got Google and Microsoft and Facebook and WhatsApp and all these guys on Apple side. And WhatsApp this week was also, you know, having an issue because of their audio stuff, which is end-to-end encrypted, and there was a whole wiretapping thing going on. There's a whole wiretapping case going on related to their app because they can't wiretap even with a warrant because it's all encrypted.
That's actually really awesome.
I guess I just don't understand what this argument really boils down to. So if we forget the whole idea of, you know, hackers can get a hold of the software that makes it possible for the FBI to brute force an iPhone. So we pretend that is not possible.
Mm-hmm.
What is the legal issue with the government compelling Apple to make this software for them?
there is no legal issue. Everybody's operating within the law.
It seems like
on both sides,
either the FBI thinks that they have the legal authority to compel them to do that, and Apple says they don't have the legal authority to compel them to do that. So what would that legal authority be? Because it seems to me like the idea of serving a warrant to get information should be enough to compel tech companies to help the FBI find this information.
That's the thing. Had it just been a device that where the encryption wasn't an issue, or that, you know, they would just be going directly to San Bernardino, whose phone it is, right, and saying, okay, here's the warrant. And San Bernardino's all cool with the warrant. They would be handing it over right now if they could. The problem is there's a third party involved, which is Apple, which that totally changes the dynamics of the whole situation. So under the law part of it, the law that the FBI and that the court order says should make Apple have to help them is this all writs thing. And so the question has come down to, you know, what is the legal definition? We have to decide what's going to get decided in court. Is that an accurate interpretation of this law? Is it applicable for this warrant? Because the warrant was basically issued because of that. And it's my understanding of the All Writs Act. It basically says that corporations do have to, in certain cases, help the government or law enforcement with cases, right? With investigations.
Right.
It basically
gives the government the ability to compel companies and people to do things that the government doesn't already have the authority to do. And in a nutshell, kind of what we're looking at here. So now the question is, does that 200-plus-year-old document, which has been updated and modified over the centuries, does that actually give the government the authority to do what some people are saying is stepping outside of the constitutional restrictions that are in place for the government and allow them to compel companies to do things like create brand new tools at the government's demand that strip away privacy and encryption? And that's a tough question on one hand, because the types of things that the All Writs Act is being used for in this case, these are things that the people that created this act had no idea would ever happen. They had no way of even conceiving of the way we share information, store information, and then protect that information today.
Well, it's hard to come up with an apt analogy for this
because it's never happened before. It's never really existed before.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like you could say, well, it's like Apple produces safes that only the person who owns the safe can open it. Only the person who knows the passcode can open it. And that's it. Even Apple can't get in because it's so secure. But Apple knows what material the safe is made out of. So, you know, they could theoretically make a saw that would be able to cut through the walls of the safe, but they have never made the saw. And FBI wants to make Apple make a saw that would do that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy.
I think that's actually a nice analogy. I mean, we could elaborate on it, but let's not, because I like keeping it simple.
Analogies can just get crazy. I'm just thinking about the whole, they're not even asking for Apple to, because Apple still can't get in. They can't create a saw,
they're not
technically.
Asking Apple to take the saw and open it up. They're saying, just make the saw for us, and then we'll hack at it for as long as it takes to try and open it.
Yeah.
But we need you to make the tool.
Yeah, right. Actually,
and now Apple's saying, if we make this saw, you can use it on any of our safes.
Right.
And the FBI is saying, but we're only going to use it on the one.
Well,
and
you know,
we'll
the
give
thing
it back
is,
to you, right?
I
or
think
you
that
can destroy it.
The
but then it becomes, well, you'll just ask us to make another saw the next time. And then we've got to do it over and over again. Or if you give us back the saw, now we've got to really protect this thing and make sure that no one else can get a hold of it. And so that's a burden also.
Right. And then at some point, you'll have a defense team say, look, Apple, you have to hand over the saw so we can understand how it cuts into the safe to make sure that what the FBI pulled out of the safe was not altered in any way by the fact that you cut the safe open.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up because it was mentioned somewhat in one of either the documents, I think it was in one of the, let's see, the U.S. government calling Apple's opposition to the order a diversion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They state that Apple basically doesn't have to show anybody how the software works.
They have to show their people that create it. I mean, they have to, like...
Yeah.
They're what now?
There's no way to keep it totally enclosed. The government's implying that it'll never get out, and there's no way they can possibly know that.
Well, okay, so let's say that it does get out. The thing about it is, and what's so clever about what the FBI has proposed in this whole situation, it is very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Apple has total control over whether software can be loaded on any phone.
Correct.
So, you know, the FBI, they have them make the software and then they use it to crack the phone and then they're done with it and they say, okay, thanks Apple. And then Apple discontinues signing that piece of software.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it such a big deal?
Okay. Jeff. Here's where it becomes a big deal. Let's say
the defense thing again.
Yeah, let's say that the FBI gets into, say, Ed Furk's iPhone, and then once there, they find information that is evidence that leads to the arrest and conviction of another person. All right, now, at that point, everything that Apple did to allow the FBI to get into the iPhone is something that any defense team is going to want to take apart, and rightly so, because they need to analyze this instrument that Apple has created to make sure that it did not do anything to alter the contents of the iPhone and therefore render the evidence that the FBI pulled off of it to be altered or inaccurate in any way. Now, to be able to do that, they have to look at the code. They have to have independent parties look at the code and analyze it as well. Then they have to take multiple iPhones and then use this tool on those iPhones to produce their own data so they have a baseline to ensure that whatever it is that came off of the iPhone that the FBI is using is accurate. So that means Apple has to create this tool in such a way so that it can be used on any iPhone so that all these other tests that need to be done to validate what they have done. All right.
Okay. So let's say after their testing period, then they stop signing that software.
Right. But okay. And then you have the other thing of, okay, I'm a criminal with access to lots of resources. What if I just bribe the people at Apple that have the signed software, or bribe them to take the software and sign it with a key that'll run it on any iPhone and smuggle it out, or a foreign government, or, right? Once the software exists and the criminal community knows it exists, there's going to be a lot of incentive to get a copy out.
And so, realistically, once Apple has handed over a copy to a legal team of any sort, it means they're also handing it over to security research companies. This stuff is going to be reverse engineered so fast. And it doesn't matter if Apple decides to not sign the software they hand it over anymore. Right. They've got the code. They can do all kinds of things with it. Keep in mind, Apple, and I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I'm like, holy crap, that's like such a powerful insight. Apple has not, to date, been able to stop people from jailbreaking iPhones. Now, if they can't stop people who don't even have access to the code from being able to figure out how to get into an iPhone, how are they going to be able to stop people that have just a bucket full of code to sift through at their leisure?
Right. I mean, people do their own signing servers. Isn't that one of the things that you do when you jailbreak? Is there's like,
well, okay, so that's
that act like Apple servers, and
I think that's the big difference, because I think part of it is the whole when the code is compiled, that is when it is intertwined with the idea of being needed to authenticated by Apple servers.
Right.
Right. So if you have the source code, you can just compile the software to say, oh, it's cool. You can look at Johnny's server over here instead of Apple's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then Johnny's server says, yep, that's good code. Install it.
I mean, the government's not stupid. They know that, I mean, they have their own security researchers, their own security teams of people and stuff like that. And you talk to anybody in the security community about this case and what's going on, and you know, is Apple correct in saying this will get out there? And they will all tell you, if they're worth their salt, that the only way to keep this information safe is to do exactly what Apple's doing: have the keys and not let the keys get out. Because once the keys are out, that's it.
Game over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on, because I'm sure we'll talk about this again very soon in the future.
FlexBrite
is an app that's similar in purpose to Flux, was briefly approved for the App Store. So it's one of those apps that changes the color temperature of your phone, but you have to, it sends you notifications periodically saying, hey, you should change your color temperature, and you click on it, and then it says, okay, I changed it. So it's not as nice as Night Shift or Flux. Flux, of course, using private APIs to just do it.
The screenshots of it was even more yellow, urine-colored than some of the other ones I had seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's been pulled. Apple saying...
Okay, so my question is, how did that get approved in the first place?
I don't know. And they even said that they worked with Apple on it, but that could have been a giant lie.
Somebody was sleeping on the job that day.
Yeah.
It happens. It's happened before. It'll happen again.
Yeah.
Stuff gets through the review system.
I think it was like $3 too. So there were definitely people who paid for this.
Yeah, it was what, like $3 or something?
Yeah. So
wait 1 week, you're gonna have the feature.
Yeah, no kidding.
On your phone. Like, just wait a week or two.
Well, this, from what I understand, worked on iPhones that wouldn't otherwise support Night Shift.
That's true. Good point. What phones don't support Night Shift?
Anything that doesn't run iOS 9?
No, you can get devices that run iOS 9 that can't run Night Shift. So, it might be the iPhone 5 or 5 and lower. I know on the iPod Touch, what's the current generation? Are we on sixth generation touch?
I don't know.
Whatever the current generation is, one back from that can't run Night Shift. So it is restricted to a certain generation of device and newer, which I found to be kind of surprising.
Hmm. Yeah, that is surprising. You wouldn't think it would require a lot of...
Maybe it's one of those artificial thresholds that Apple creates to make newer devices more enticing. Because, I mean, they do that sometimes. Well, yeah. I think that, like, any company does that, really.
Yeah, it's not saying on the...
I was looking on the preview page to see if there was specs or anything.
It doesn't say. But I'm sure we'll figure it out.
Oh, well, now I'm looking at Night Shift. It's pretty bright yellow, too, when it's activated.
So you're not a fan?
I don't know. I'll try it.
I like it. It's one of my favorite things. I love it. It's great. Just mainly to not get blasted at night.
Yeah, it is pretty bright. But I'm usually watching movies, so then I don't notice. I usually have to turn the brightness up because movies these days are always made so, most of them are made so dark.
Yeah.
I don't know what that trend is all about, especially if you watch any comic book movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's because it needs to be dark, both literally and figuratively. Early iPhone 7 cases have no headphone jack, and they do have stereo speaker cutouts. So let's see here. French leaker Steve something, I'm not going to try to pronounce it.
Steve has
shared photos of some of the cases, or one of the cases, that would be for the iPhone 7, has stereo speakers. It looks like it may have a cutout for dual lenses or perhaps just for a flash, as usual. Although I guess comparing it to my iPhone case, it looks like it's maybe a little bit bigger. So who knows? But yeah, we're not sure. There's also speculation, of course, that the iPhone Pro will be the only iPhone that has the stereo camera lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Oh, and I mentioned...
Did we cover the crazy rumor that one of the sites was saying that the iPhone Pro was going to be a 5.8 inch?
No. Let's do it.
It was just... That's it. There was one rumor site out there. It might have been DigiTimes or one of them. I can't remember. I might even one of like the Chinese leak sites or something like that. But they were saying that there was going to be a 5.8 inch version, and that was the iPhone Pro. And nice. I'm just like, I do not think Apple's going to do a whole nother size.
I don't think they are either.
Yeah. So, but that rumor is out there that the Pro would be a bigger one, and it would have the dual lens. So you'd have the, I guess you'd have the SE, then you'd have the 5-inch iPhone, the 7, and then you'd have the 7 Plus, I guess, at 5.7?
Right? Something like that. I can't remember now.
What size is the... Since I dropped down, I forget now. But anyway, and then you'd have a 5.8, like, giant phone.
Mm-hmm.
What size is the Plus?
I don't know, big.
5.5, right? Why do I not know that off the top of my head?
I don't know. I think it's time for picks, though.
It's 5.5.
Okay, picks. I guess I got picks. It right.
Jeff.
All right. My pick, the build-up to this pick is I do a lot of writing on my iPad, and the app that I've been using for a long time just as a basic writing tool, I've been having some issues with reliability, with proper data synchronization, because that's a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've been looking around, and I have started playing around with Ulysses.
Hmm. Ooh, yeah.
And, oh, man, what a wonderful app. So I'm using it on my iPad Pro with my Apple Smart keyboard cover thing, and it's great. And it synchronizes through iCloud, and so I can have it on multiple iPads and my Mac, and work on the same document across all the devices. Plus, they've added iPhone support. That's brand new. Ooh. So you can now work on your text documents in Ulysses on any of your devices. So it's suddenly dramatically more flexible in where you write and how you write. And I've been really, really impressed with it. It's been very reliable for my document creation and synchronizing. The one thing that might scare some people is that it is, well, it'd be two things. It is using iCloud only for its syncing, and it stores its content in its own database as opposed to individual files. What I have found, though, is that having everything in the single database actually hasn't been an issue for me at all.
Hmm.
And so far, syncing has worked perfectly, so that hasn't been an issue either. And And wow, I am just really, really liking Ulysses a lot.
Sweet.
If it's in its own database, well, I guess documents get backed up locally too. I was going to say, yes. Wondering if there's any advantages with like local backups.
Well, it does local backups also.
Right.
And it timestamps them. So you can have multiple backups. You can also force additional backups. And those are stored locally. And on the Ulysses website, they have a little FAQ that says, here's the exact path to the databases. So you can go into your library folder and find your backups and make extra backups of those independent of anything else you're doing. So they're really good about making sure that your data is backed up and that there's multiple versions of that. Which is nice, because if something should go wonky with iCloud and you have documents that get blown away, mm-hmm. you have multiple backups, so you can roll back in time.
Cool.
And I forgot how much it costs. I want to say it's like $20.
It is.
Now and if you want the Mac version, it's like $50, I think.
Yeah. They're one of those companies that is doing the right thing, I think, on their app pricing, because I've heard nothing but good things about the app.
I'm really pleased.
Everybody who uses it. And it's usually hardcore writers that I hear praising it. So it's definitely targeted at people who write a lot.
Yes, it definitely is. And another thing you can do, you can get these templates or I don't want to call them skins for the interface, but templates for the way your content looks when you're writing, which is nice because you can customize and make your own templates. So you can have everything look just the way you want. Also, you can export your documents into all different kinds of formats. And if you're using Markdown, it will apply proper formatting to the outputted file. So it's really cool. I'm not a Markdown user right now, but based on how much power I have with export options in Ulysses, I may start using Markdown.
Markdown is awesome. I switched a couple of years ago on the recommendation of David Sparks,
mm-hmm.
and I've never looked back. I do almost all of my stuff in Markdown now.
Yeah, and the only reason I haven't gotten into it is because with the tools I was using, there was no point in me using Markdown. Yeah. But that changes with Ulysses.
Yeah, just the portability of documents becomes an amazing thing.
Cool. All right. And it's on sale, too. I think you're getting $5 off.
Oh, sweet.
So it would normally be 25, so it's 19 right now. Adam.
Yes.
What is your pick?
I'm going to make a pick that I have done in the past, because this is a product I've used with my MacBook Pros for years now. But the people over at RadTech sent me one of their RadTech sleeves, which this is it's a microfiber cover that you slide.
Their sleeves.
Yeah, you slide over your MacBook Pro. They now have ones, though, that fit the iPad Pro.
Ooh.
So they sent me the iPad Pro one, and it's just as awesome. I mean, it's like this really durable fabric material. It's a microfiber. You can use it to actually clean your display, which is another thing I like about it. So it protects your iPad Pro or your notebook when you're sliding it in and out of your bag, because it covers the whole thing. So you slide it on. It's a really nice, tight, form-fitting thing. And then you can slide it in your bag, and you don't have to worry about, oh, do I have other things rolling around in there? Is it going to scratch the display? I was a little bit worried about it because I also, you know, I use the smart keyboard cover, and I like that too. But what's cool is you just slide this over, and you make sure that the smart connector is on the right side, you know, on the end that's open and sticking out, and you can clip your keyboard cover right on top of that. And sweet. That works great.
Ooh.
Yeah, and another thing that I didn't know about it when I saw it on their site and then they sent it to me, I got it and I put it on my iPad Pro and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And then I noticed there was like a little cut in the back of it. I'm like, oh, man, it's damaged. And then I noticed there was a little cut right to the other side of it. What it is it's two little slots you can slide your Apple Pencil in. So once you've got this on your iPad Pro, you slide it through the slots on the back, and it will hold your iPad Pencil for you clipped into the back.
That's awesome.
And some people might worry about, I don't know what this material is. It's like a space age material, because I was a little bit worried, well, then it's going to stretch out, you know, and that part will become loose. No, it just snaps right back. I mean, the material, and like I said, I've used them on my MacBook Pros for years. I had one that I transferred between like 3 15-inch MacBook Pros because it lasted like 5 6 years, and it didn't show hardly any signs of wear.
Nice.
Or, you know, a lot of times fabrics will start to break down and fray and stuff like that. This stuff doesn't. It's amazing. Yeah,
I'll totally back you up on that. I have a sleeve for a MacBook Pro that's, yeah, it's like yours. I bet it's 7 years old now.
Yep.
And the only reason you can tell it's older is because I've never run it through the wash. So so there's dirt marks on it.
Yeah, and you can wash them too. So if they do get dirty, you just throw them in the wash and they'll come out clean. I spilled some guacamole on this one already, actually. So
well, that's just field testing for science.
Exactly. They're great. So you'll go, the pricing might shock you a little bit, but they are so worth it because they'll last forever. And it's a product I've loved for years, and it's just cool now that they have them for the iPad Pro. So it's the Rad Sleeves, S-L-E-E-V-S, or Z, rather, for iPad Pro, and you can get it at radtech.com.
Yeah, in the so it's $31.95.
And they come in all kinds of colors. So I have a gray one, but they've got, you know, red,
fuchsia,
green,
indigo,
and purple,
green,
and
grape, black.
Black, so... get a little style to customize it to your taste, too.
Yeah, make sure you check the box for the Apple Pencil slot if you want that.
Oh, it's an optional thing. I didn't notice that. Yeah, it's a buck if you want to have them put the little cuts in it.
Yep, yep. Okay, so my pick this week, I don't know if you could say that it's a pick for Apple Music, per se. It's really what I've been doing with Apple Music lately, and I think the guest DJs, the radio shows, the little productions that they put on are really awesome. And the two that I've been enjoying most have been A-Track's Day Off Radio. So, you know, notable, electronic music guy and producer. A-Track has a show called Day Off Radio. It is weekly. As far as I can tell, it's every week. So he just put out, I think, the 32nd edition of this thing, and the mixes every week are like on point. They're awesome. I'm surprised he has time to like breathe and eat in the week if he's producing these mixes every single week. It's really awesome. And that's just something that's included. You know, you can just listen to it on demand or live on Apple Radio or Beats One Radio, rather. I only wish I could download them for offline listening. That'd be really cool.
Usually produce playlists.
Yeah, so but that's different. You don't get the mixing and all that stuff that happens when it's actually
live.
Done. And some of the tracks you just can't listen to. Some of the tracks just aren't on Apple Music. They're independently done tracks.
You should script. You probably could script
Hijack.
Audio Hijack.
I've been considering that. I haven't gotten around to it, but yeah, I've been considering that. And the other radio program I've been listening to is Laser Sound by Major mm-hmm. Laser. It comes out regularly, but it's not weekly, which makes sense. Diplo has like many things to do. I think they've just done their 10th episode of Laser Sound. Let me see here. Yeah, number 10. They did it in India. It's really cool. Just check both of those out if you haven't had a chance yet. There are, of course, other ones from like Dr. Dre. I think there are...
I'll recommend St. Vincent's Mixtape.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people like that one. For sure.
Yeah, basically, she takes a theme each week. Somebody writes in with a story or a theme, and then they build a playlist, a mixtape playlist based on that theme.
That's so cool.
And she has a real eclectic taste in music. So
yeah,
kind of covers the gamut from classical stuff to new stuff to, hip hop to, you know, you name it.
Man, I should check
it's
that
like
out.
Every style.
It's yeah, I'm just loving the Beats One stuff on Apple Music. I very rarely at this point, if I'm not listening to something that I already have on my phone, I typically listen to a Beats One show at this point. I very rarely like go and search out a particular like new album or whatever. I just kind of get my new music through these productions, which is nice. And of course, you can listen to Beats One radio live, but you can't listen to the previous shows if you don't pay for it.
Right.
So I really enjoy that. So check it out. 8-Track Stay Off Radio and Laser Sound by Major Lazer. And of course, I guess that's an inherent pick for Apple Music. I've been really enjoying it. And the interface has gotten better. Don't you think that the whole experience has gotten better lately? The only thing that kind of upsets me is that if I pause the thing I'm listening to for too long, it just kind of goes away. It goes bye-bye. And I have to start it over. It's the only bummer. But anyway, you can find all of our picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Tell a friend. Leave a rating. Leave some stars. And feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send your questions, comments, feedback, all that stuff. Of course, check out our sponsor this week, which is HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com, and you get a whopping $35 off your first box when you use the code TIOSS. Highly recommend that. I mean, you get some cheap food at the very least your first week, so give it a try. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at BackbeatMedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the MattCast at MattCast.com. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, TMO Daily Observations podcast. Check that out. And at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
And thanks for having me yet again. I need to go check out Day Off Radio.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.